the cost to me of getting there didn't matter. You know, I didn't care. You know, if I fell tired, I fell sick, it doesn't matter. I need to get to that. And, you know, I think that if we stop for a second and we realize what's really important to us, you know, and focus a little bit more on the journey and getting there, I think we could probably save some of those pains in our chests and other health issues that people are experiencing nowadays.
Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this week my guest is Kieran Avitabile. Kieran is an advisor and coach with experience in sales and consulting. He also has a passion for sports and is an Ironman finisher. Please subscribe, share, and review. It's the only way podcasts like this have a chance to survive. The title tune is Happy and Shiny by The Round About Us. For more information and more episodes, please visit socialfabric.ie. So I was just thinking that while I was waiting, I was thinking, like, I'm for full disclosure, I've known Kieran a long time, but he's married to our niece, Olga. But although I know you for a long time, I don't really know you. That's a kind of interesting thing. And I know a little bit about you, which I thought might as well start to get into and get to know you a little bit. So I was just thinking, geez, with a name like Andrea Splendori, people know where I'm from, but with Kieran Avitabile, that gets a bit confusing. So maybe we'll start from there.
Yeah, it's always interesting and confusing when anyone asks us where we're from. But I guess Kieran, Irish mum, Avitabile, Italian dad. I was born in Rome, grew up there until I was about 12 and a half. And then mum and dad decided to move to Ireland. And as a 12-year-old, I had no choice but to follow. So that's where the name comes from.
And tell me something, at 12, that's quite, you know, you're pre-teens, you know, all your mates playing football down the street or whatever. What was it like to uproot and move to Waterford?
Horrible. I hated the first 12 months. As you said, I was in that stage of life where, you know, had lots of friends, played football, went to school in a small town outside of Rome, and went from that to not knowing anybody, having to wear a uniform. In Italy, we didn't wear uniforms. You know, the uniform had ties, shirts, the type of clothes I'd never worn before. So it was, and it was an all boys school. So a lot of change, a lot of differences there. But, you know, hated the first 12 months. As I said, every single day I used to tell my parents as a 12-year-old, whenever I'm 18, I'm moving back with my grandparents and I'm going to go to university in Rome. But once we got past those 12 months, you know, I'm extremely grateful for my parents for having given us that opportunity.
That's interesting. I want to stay with that for a second because, what was the change then? Because, you know, a 12-year-old male, you already had ideas of going back to university, which is quite another story. You know, that you know, I don't think I thought of university until last week, never mind the 12. But what changed then? What was the 12 months? What was the difference then? What made the difference staying in Ireland that you liked?
I think university was probably less of knowing that I was going to university, but you know, being the son of a teacher, I knew I had to go to university. Andrea was probably more like it. That was decided for us. But no, jokes aside, to be totally honest, the only real difference was I made friends, right? You know, so as I said, I went from playing football with my friends on the streets, you know, at the weekends in the little piazzas in the towns where we lived. To not knowing anybody and spending my Saturdays and Sundays at home. At the time, I was still writing letters to my friends in Italy, right? We didn't have WhatsApp on the phone, certainly. We had dial-up connections at home. So every so often, I would chat to them on the internet and that. But, you know, I was living in Ireland, but very much still in Italy in my head. And once I managed to meet some people and kind of got through the barrier of just being classmates to becoming friends and therefore being invited to go for walks into town and play football with them on a Saturday and Sunday on the streets, everything else changed, right? I then, you know, really, really settled into Irish life and made my own groups of friends. And therefore, I didn't have to go into town with mummy or daddy every day on a Saturday every week on a Saturday and Sunday.
And just one thing that that we don't have in common, like I don't have, which, like, I met both your parents, obviously, and your dad is very Italian, And your mum is very
Yeah.
Irish. I'm not very Italian anymore. I kind of lost my Italian. I don't know where I am, what I am anymore. But that's dual, like very strong dual Italian Irish. How did that work out? And tell me a bit more about that. You're very much rooted in Italy still to this day, and but
Yeah.
also in Ireland. What was it like?
Yeah, I think it's probably something that makes me somewhat unique, I guess, you know, and it's something that I'm very proud of, Andrea, because, you know, a lot of people would ask me, do you feel more Irish? Do you feel more Italian? And sometimes now living in Spain for the last 8 years, do I feel in any way Spanish? I've been asked, but realistically, I don't feel any more Irish than I do Italian, and I don't feel any more rooted in Italian culture than I do in Irish culture, vice versa. You know, I feel very lucky that I've had the opportunity to not only have parents from both those countries and cultures, but to really live in those countries and cultures. And, you know, I like to think that I've taken the best out of both, and, you know, still very much living in the Italian culture, even though I left when I was 12, but also very much proud and living the Irish culture as well.
Yeah, and it is fascinating because you guys as a family, you're so multicultural. Then you're now your current family with your wife and kids, as you say, living in Spain. And it's just an amazing melting pot of cultures and languages. And what
Yeah.
do you think that is doing to you guys as a group, as a nuclear group, like your own family, you, Olga, and the kids? What is that doing to you that is different? Like you mentioned unique, and it is unique. It's a unique situation to be in.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, that has pros and cons, right? I mean, you know, I said I'm very proud of the dual culture that I carry with me. You know, Olga being Russian, and you know, if you look at the four of us with Nikolai and Emilia, each one of us are born in a different country, right? You know, we're all born in different countries in our family. But you know, I think that it brings a very different dynamic within the family itself. And I remember when we were growing up, Emilia and Nico in their early age, there was always the question, you know, do we speak English? Do we speak Italian? Do we speak Russian? Then we ended up moving to Spain when Nicolai was only two. Do we speak Spanish? They go to school, they learn Catalan in school, right? So even just deciding what language we speak at home and what language our kids should pursue is different. But I really see it as a massive opportunity for our kids. I mean, our kids are now growing up with five languages in their head, in their ears, wherever it is, at different levels of comfort. But you know, it's amazing. I think it can only be a positive thing for them.
Brilliant. So let's go back to Ireland for a moment. So you're just 12 years old. You kind of decided, that's it, I'm going back to Italy. And then finally you got all your mates. You're now in Waterford. You're enjoying life. And tell me a little bit about the path before we get to talk about business. You know, what was Kieran like? You know, once as a teenager, full on teenager now with a Waterford accent, ready to take on the world. What was Kieran like at 14, 15? What were you like?
Oof, I don't think I've been asked that question before, Andrea. What was it like as a teenager? I wouldn't like to hear my mother answering that one. I was always very social, Andrea. Like, I had a lot of friends, and I think that's why I found that first year in Ireland very tough, because I went from having lots of friends to having no friends. So I think I was able to build a lot of friendships very quickly once I got past that initial phase. And I'm very outgoing. I've always been very much into sports, into getting involved in different things. So you know, I very quickly built different groups of friends as well, right? Not relying on one single group of friends. So I certainly gave my parents headaches, right? While grades weren't necessarily an issue in school, behavior sometimes was. I get distracted very easily, so you can imagine in a class of 30 kids, that's probably not good. It's not going to get you the right attention from the teachers. But you know, apart from that, I don't think outside of school, I don't think I gave them too many headaches. I hope so, Andre.
And you say you get distracted very easily. And I mean, you're still a very fit man. We'll get to the fitness in a minute. But what was it? Was the sport anything to do with the, stay focused? Did you always play sport? Were you always into the fitness?
I was from a very young age, and that actually came when we were living in Italy. We lived in a very, very small apartment. It was actually a one bed apartment where my parents built a partition in the bedroom to make it a two bed apartment. So, as a result, my parents were always very keen to get us into any type of sporting activity after school to tire us out before they brought us back home, because we just didn't have enough space to be energetic in the house. So they wanted to make sure that we were exhausted by the time we got home every day. So I did everything from athletics to basketball to swimming to various different things later on in life as well. But I always found great enjoyment in sports, in movement, in being outside. I both enjoy training by myself, but also being part of team sports as well. The social aspect of sports is, I think, especially in my younger years, was very important.
So let's start with one of the songs you gave me, which is Va Pensiero, but you've chosen the Zucchero, the version. So Va Pensiero obviously is it Verdi, Giuseppe Verdi, I think.
Originally, yes.
Originally, yes, in the Zucchero remastered version from 2007. Tell me about that song.
Yeah, it's a song, when I thought about some of these songs, Andrea, it's a song that was in my ears, I guess, growing up with my dad. He it would be one of the songs that he would have played so that we would have heard in the house. A couple of things, really kind of talked to me about the song, not necessarily the song itself, but the memories and some of the phases in the life that I was going through during that. It kind of symbolizes my Italian part of life as well, brings me back to my childhood. We might get onto this. I've got a pretty special relationship with my dad, and I was very lucky to go actually to a Zucchero concert in Dublin, of all places, when we were living in Ireland as well. So it also kind of symbolizes and reminds me a little bit of the relationship that I have with that.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. But it is something I want to talk to you about because I know you're we're jumping around. We don't need to go through chronology. I will get back to a few things. But you do have a special relationship with your dad, Claudio. And so tell me a bit more about that because it is quite unique. It is especially maybe now is a little bit different. But are you 40 now? Nearly 40? Am I right?
Nearly 40, not yet, not till
Okay, nearly
November.
40. So, your dad is from a different generation that, mostly would have worked, made sure that the family was looked after, and normally not too much time for the kids. Now, I'm generalizing here, but there was work to be done and there was money to be made. But all you guys have you're almost like brothers in a way. Tell me a bit more.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it. I usually describe him as my best friend, but brothers is probably even more so because, I guess you have that family intimacy around the relationship as well. I really don't know why, Andrea. All I can say is that, and this is something that I've been thinking a lot about recently since taking a break myself, but my dad probably wasn't with us for a very long time, but he was extremely present when he was with us. So, it wasn't really about how many hours a day that dad spent with us, but it was when he was there, we really felt his presence in the house. And he typically went to work probably before we got up, and my mum says, she was trying to keep us awake, make sure that we didn't fall asleep before he came back home, because he was traveling in and out to Rome. We lived outside the city. So it's I don't know where that was born, but I do know that he always had a very open relationship with us as kids. It wasn't, we're the adults, you're the kids. He spoke to us a lot. He talked to us a lot. And me personally, but I think I can speak for my sisters, we always felt that we could speak to him or talk to him about absolutely anything. There was no topic off the table. And even as a teenage boy growing up, there was literally nothing I couldn't speak to my dad about, concerns, things. My dad knows everything about my life pretty much. So we've always had that really open relationship, and we've done amazing things together. I mean, my dad was never a runner, and as you remember, probably, we run the Rome Marathon together a number of years ago, and in a couple of weeks we're going to do a week of the Camino together. So we've always tried to do things together, and I think maybe we've had very similar interests, right? Football, AS Roma, as something that has kept us very close together and tied us together, still does to this day. So yeah, that was a bit of a ramble, but that kind of hopefully gives you some background as to maybe how that relationship might have flourished.
But that is it's amazing though you just said there, like, because you're basically, I was only guessing that that's what your dad was doing at the time, that working, because that's what it was and that's what it is. Although now we have remote working, so it's easier to be there but not necessarily to be present, and that's
Correct.
really the what the big difference. And I love that the present, knowing that even if he was there for 5 minutes, you had a full 5 minutes for yourself. Which is quite incredible. Yeah, that's lovely. And obviously now you as a parent, that's really, really important to you, being present, as opposed to being there, right? Being in the house, you have a home office, but that's not really what you're looking for. It's being present, right? It's
Yeah, I mean, this is really fast forwarding to literally probably the last 6 months of my life, Andrea, because as due to some health issues, and I got a little bit of a wake up call, and therefore I'm taking some time off from full time employment, and I'm pouring all that time into my kids, because I think I would take the earliest flight possible and the latest flight possible, not to spend the night away whenever I was working, because I wanted to be there when the kids got up the next morning. So I probably tried to put in as many hours as I could with my kids, but if I have to be self-critical, I was not always present, right? I was there having breakfast with my kids, but probably thinking about a presentation or negotiation that I had that day, right? So what I'm really trying to do a lot more of now is not just with my kids, to be honest, in anything that I do, be present and be focused on that one thing that I'm doing at that moment in time. And even in the last, it's been probably 4 months now since I stopped working. Even Olga, my wife, has commented that the relationship with the kids has changed. The way they talk to me, the way they seek me, the time that they spend with me, their behavior around me has changed as a result of me being more present.
That's fabulous. So let's rewind a bit, because we want to get to the moment you decide to take a break, because that's really what I'm really interested in. I got to know a few, and I say a few of you in a general way. A few guys in your age group, I got to know a few of you, and this seemed to be a kind of a pattern that I noticed, right? So when I first met you, you were working here in Ireland and with an organization here in Ireland. You were in sales. Tell us a bit about the story of your career, because you're very driven, am I correct in say you're driven, career-wise? You like to get to the next step. Tell us about that journey. How did it all pan out from the start? Work here, job here, and one and on.
For the good or the bad, I've been very focused on my career. It's always been a very important part of my life, and I've poured a lot of energy and effort into that, which probably will bring us to the conversation of what happened then a few months ago. But I started in consultancy, and that was a decision, a conscious decision that I made, because in my mind I thought, okay, I want to be a sales guy eventually, but I want to gain the most amount of skills in the shortest possible time. And in my mind, doing that through a consultancy and working with different clients on different problems in different roles was the fastest way to do that. And in my mind, I'm a planner, Andrea, right? And we'll probably talk about that part of my character as well. I was going to do consultancy for 5 years, and then I was going to get into sales, and that's where my career was going to go. After about 2.5 years, I realized that I was doing something to do something else, while maybe it may, if I wanted to be in sales, the best thing would be to go and do sales. So that's what I decided to do, and I went from working in consultancy financial services to working in the agri sector, basically selling Irish beef to the Italian market. But very quickly then wanted to get back into the tech space and join an organization. Well, I think I can say it right, a joint sales force in Dublin, and spent some time with them there. And it was only after that when I joined Viva, who were built on Salesforce, so we're somewhat a partner of Salesforce, where really my career took a little bit of an acceleration through the management ranks. And I was extremely lucky with the people that I worked there, with some of the mentors that I still have today from that experience at Viva. And I was given huge opportunities to grow in terms of promotions. And then very recently, I wanted to try and take some of that skill set into a startup, Techro, an Irish startup, in fact, in the clinical space, and spent the last 3 years there working with a fantastic group of people. But as we said, I had to take a little bit of a break earlier this year.
Well, let me go back a little bit, because I remember meeting you when you just joined. Well, yeah, you just joined Salesforce and then you move on to Viva. So, but you mentioned, you know, the way it was stratospheric. Really, the path from working in the office to next thing you're flying all over the world constantly. And what was it like now, with having had a bit of time off, looking back at your career? What was it like there, you know, from not so much from a work, from a human point, what was it like to go from, okay, I'm the guy in the office, now I'm the manager, now I'm the senior manager, now I'm the whatever. You know, how did it feel? How was it like? What was it like?
It felt great, to be honest, Andre, at the time, right? You know, so I mentioned around pouring all my energy into work, and, you know, probably one of the things I could have done better is, you know, I over-identified with my job, right? You know, I was my job, and that became everything, right? And while I kept telling myself I was doing it for my family, to provide for my family, in reality, I think I was probably feeding my own ego, right? So the fact that I was lucky enough to do all those things, you know, I kept feeding that ego, right? So that ego felt great. But, you know, I also have to say, like, it's the experiences I've had, the people that I've met, the places that I've seen, and the things that I learned doing that, it was super intense. But it was an amazing schooling, right? An amazing learning for me as well. You know, there has always been, though, Andrea, the feeling of guilt about being away from my kids, right? Especially when they were younger. That's probably the negative side. If you're asking me about the human side, is that I always felt that, you know, I wasn't there, and therefore the reason why I was waking up at 3 to get a 4 a.m. flight. A 4 a.m. taxi for a 6 a.m. flight and coming back at 1 a.m. the next day, because I didn't want to spend that night away and spend the night away from the kids. But by default, I was so tired that even when I was having that breakfast with the kids, I wasn't there. You know, I wasn't really present and spending time with them.
I'm interested in that feeding the ego, because, again, as I say, the few people I know, And nothing against the companies, by the way, that you work with or any other companies out there. There is a business, there's a business plan, and, you know, they're very successful companies, et cetera, et cetera. So there's nothing, I've nothing against the corporations or whatever they are. That's not for me to say. But I'm just curious about that, that system that, you know, feeds a certain, well, I don't know, what does it feed a certain personality? Do you need to be a certain personality to be within?
I absolutely believe it is the personality. And that's why I would say, you know, if I look at, you know, everything that I went through and I guess to a certain extent where I got to with my health, it's Ciarán's fault, right? It's not the organization's fault. And what I mean by that is that I made a certain decision career-wise at one stage to move from one company to the other, because I was telling myself that the reason that I was struggling personally, health-wise, emotionally, was because of the company. And in fact, then I realized, no, the problem was me, right? You know, so it didn't matter what company I worked with. It didn't matter what role I took on. You know, that was innate in my character. I was going to pour absolutely everything I could into it. And, you know, you know about some of the things I've done as well from a sporting perspective and everything. It's I've got a little bit of that obsessive behavior in my character, right? So whatever I do, I tend to put everything into it, you know, and I need to learn how to balance those things a little bit better for my own good.
But again, out of curiosity, if if you had at a moment, okay, to say, okay, this is not about the company, it's about me. Now, obviously, hindsight, we don't know what the answer would have been. But if you were to taking the foot off the gas, the previous company before you went on to the startup, would it work for you? Like, would it work for the company? Having a Kieran that wasn't going 100%, it was going 95%, so they could spend time at home.
So this is the question that I'm trying to answer right now with some of the investigating and kind of researching that I'm doing at the moment, because I have this thesis where I strongly believe that we don't have to stop or give up our job, or we don't have to be less successful to find some sort of balance or make sure that we're looking after our emotional and mental health. I think that there are modalities and there's things that we can do where we can be as successful, if not even more, because I went through times at work where I was working till 2-3 o'clock in the morning, answering emails, putting together PowerPoints, putting together negotiation strategies, you know, also helped maybe by a glass or two of wine, right, to keep awake until that time. I needed the sugar in and the alcohol to keep me going. So you could also argue that probably while I was putting in a lot of hours, I probably wasn't performing at my absolute best, right? You know, what I'm thinking now is that, you know, if I did things differently, I could have still put in the same hours or put in the same effort, but done it in such a way where I was looking after myself a little bit more, not thinking I'm young now, I can burn the candle at both ends. And if there was a third end, I'd probably burn the third end. And, you know, I'll reap the rewards when I'm older. And therefore probably giving that job, that company, that role, potentially more longevity, and ultimately probably driving even more value for that employer or that business.
Yeah. And so the catalyst was this, the health scare was very much, you know, it was really in the back of your mind, but the health scare, which if you can talk about a little bit, let us know what happened. What was the, you know, the moment you went, okay, that's it, time to change here?
Yeah. As you said, it was definitely in the back of my mind because I've had smaller scares in the past, right? So it wasn't the first time that something had happened that made me think, ooh, you know, maybe I'm pushing too hard here. But I'd just come back from a week in Cyprus training with Olga. We were training for an event called Hyrox, and we were doing a training camp there. And I think we flew back on the Friday, and on the Sunday went for a very easy walk. I've got a group of friends here in Sitges where we go for a run and a dip on a Sunday, and there's always a bunch of us that turn up. And that morning when I got up, I felt really strange is all I can describe it. Like, and in a weird way, I actually felt like some of my senses were either slowed down or just off, right? You know, my hearing, my visual was a little bit off. But as we started to run, the guys asked me about our week in Cyprus, and I proceeded to tell them, and I couldn't find the words to speak. So I knew I wanted to speak about and tell them about this specific restaurant, but I couldn't think of the word restaurant. And at the time we were actually chatting in Spanish. So one of my friends said jokingly, you know, switch to English. You're obviously tired. You can't find the words in Spanish. And I did, and I still couldn't find the word for restaurant. And it got to the stage where basically every second word I was looking for, I couldn't find it, and I was slurring my words. So I asked the guys to just give me a couple of minutes. We kept running, but I said, look, I just need to catch my breath or whatever. I don't know. I'm just tired. But then I felt pins and needles in my face and in my arm, and that got me really worried. So instead of telling the guys what was going on, I said, look, I'm off, guys. I'm probably just tired from the training week and the travel and everything else. So I'm going to go back home. So I left my friends and I proceeded to run in the opposite direction by myself. And it was the first time in my life that I started thinking about and got scared about death, right? Because I started thinking about, I don't have a phone on me. If anything happens to me here, I can't call Olga to tell her that something has happened. So, and the phone was in the car. So I said, between here and getting to my car, I'm in danger here, right? You know, and I thought to myself, I'm going to have a heart attack. But anyway, I'm still here on this podcast with you. So that didn't happen. Got home and I went to tell Olga what happened, but obviously I couldn't talk, right? You know, so I couldn't find the words, and that really scared her. But eventually managed to explain what I was going through. So we called the doctor, and, you know, she told me to get to the hospital quick, and a specific hospital where there was a neurology department, and they suspected a mini stroke. So they did all the tests, and to this day, what the specialist said is, and we went through months of tests and research, they say that it's very possible that I had a mini stroke, but due to my young age and my fitness level, that there was no evidence of it in any of the tests that they ran later. So that was really something that I kind of realized. I'd had some smaller scares in the past. This was felt a lot more serious. It kind of I was a lot more scared going through that experience, and I just thought to myself, if I don't change something drastically here, the next one may not be so pretty. And the specialist all kind of talked to me a little bit about my lifestyle, and when I told them about my lifestyle, they basically said, I think the one thing that you could do for yourself and your family is to really rethink parts of that lifestyle.
Okay, well, let's break it with a song, which is very apt. It's Time to Say Goodbye by Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman. Tell me about that song.
So that song, you'll know because you were a master of ceremony, but my sister sang that song at Olga and my wedding. So again, in this case, it was less about the song itself and more about what it reminded me of every time I hear it. And it was a beautiful moment having obviously my sister sing at our wedding, but also kind of reminds me and symbolizes the unity between Olga and I. And obviously at that stage, we've lived together for a long time. We already had Nikolai, so it really was just a symbolic thing, but at the same time, still very important, right? It was a moment that we shared with a lot of our closest friends and our family members. So it kind of always brings me back to the union between Olga and I, and that's kind of what drove the decision for that song.
Yeah, amongst the many things I do, I celebrated your wedding. That's correct.
Jesus, Germany.
What a beautiful day it was. Okay, so now you got this care. Now you need to make up your mind what to do. And you presented the case to the doctor. Doctor says there's a couple of things you need to change in your life. And you say that you kind of hinted at the fact your fitness. You've done Ironman. You've done all these crazy things. You carry on doing it, which is great. You love doing that. Perhaps. Pushing it harder than most of us would, but you have the body, you have the fitness to do it. So all of a sudden you have this focus for work and this focus for you're just back from a week in Cyprus of hard work, hard physical work. So something's got to give, right? And you're chosen the work versus the fitness because you're still keeping the fitness going, perhaps not to the same extent as the Ironman, but. And what was it like to make that decision, having been focused for so long on, you said at one point work was defining you. You were Kieran, the manager, Kieran, the negotiator, Kieran, all of those things. And all of a sudden, you have to make a decision, letting go of something that is quite important to you. What was it like?
It was a very difficult decision, Andrea. And if I'm to be totally honest, while I had made the decision that I was going to give up work, I kept pushing it back. And it was actually ultimately Olga more so that pushed me and made the decision for me. There was an instance where I came off a phone call, and I was very animated on this call. And when I came off the call, I couldn't stop my hands from shaking. Right. So, I was worried, and I said to Olga, we were sharing a home office, so she heard the conversation, and I said, I can't stop my hands shaking, Olga, something is wrong. So she was the one that said to me, okay, that's enough. You've made the decision, but you're not doing anything about it. I'm now deciding that unless you call your boss and you call it a day, I'm going to call him next week. So I didn't think it was a good idea for Olga to call him, so I said I'd call him myself. But I knew I had to take some time off, and you're right, because one of the things that the specialist said is, I used to use sports as a way to relieve stress, and I thought that I was doing good, but he said it's still stress to your body, right? So that's why he was saying you need to think about it slightly different. So while I'm still doing the fitness, I'm looking into different modalities to release stress or whatever it is that don't mean that I have to be in this upregulated state all the time. But you know, it was scary at first. One, because it was my identity, as we said, right? You know, I identified myself as whatever it was, the VP of sales, the leader, or whatever it was at the time, the global head of sales. But also because as a father, as you know, I felt it was my duty, my job to provide for my family. So all of a sudden I was going to take these 6 months off, which meant I wasn't going to have an income to provide for my family, right? And so I was lucky enough to be able to do it. But you know, for me personally, it felt like I wasn't doing what my job was as the father, as the husband of the family itself. And it's strange because it's probably been one of the best decisions I've ever made, right? I feel much different about it now. But the actual making the decision, I have to say, I was very lucky to have a wife that not only supported me, but actually pushed me to actually make that decision at that moment in time.
And support is really important. Obviously, the family support is really important. How about from the other side, you know, from the work? Because this is something that a lot of people are going through today. A lot of us will go through that decision-making process. And this is the fear factor, the fear factor you highlighted. Obviously, the financial factor, but beyond that is, you know, how am I going to actually approach this with my boss, with my company, with the market out there, you know? Because I'm somebody in the market that is needed, and all of a sudden taking myself out of it. But what was the portal like from the other side?
So I've personally been very lucky, and you know, throughout life, I would say I've been a very lucky person. Life has been good to me and to Olga and our family. But you know, I've always been very lucky to work with people that you know really cared about the individual and the person, right? So I got tons of support from the organization that I worked with at the time. You know, I was offered to go to on reduced time, change role for a period of time, whatever it took for me to sort myself out and potentially not have to pull myself out of the working life. But you know, I was very appreciative of the offer at the time, but I knew, going back to our earlier conversation, that I was the problem. It wasn't the job or the company or the role that was the issue. So changing role, or you know, I knew I had to unplug. I had to rethink certain aspects of what I was doing every single day. So I got fantastic support there from the employer. The other side of that, which probably talks a little bit more to what you're saying, is that I've been a little bit overwhelmed, I guess, by, you know, I've spoken a lot about this to a lot of friends and families, and the amount of people that have opened up to me and said, you know, I'm suffering some of the same symptoms that you're talking about, you know. You know, I've been thinking a lot about throughout the years, and when did it start, and how could I have known, and what could I have done different. And, you know, I remember specifically times where we would drive, we'd be driving into the office with a colleague of mine, and we would laugh about the tension and the pains in the chest that we had. Like, if you think about it, like we were so irresponsible, you know, we were both feeling it and we laughed about it rather than stopping and saying, hey, Kieran, you know, that's not good. You know, this is serious here. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are going through these, and but because of the fear that you talked about with the employer, or because of the responsibility of needing to provide for the family, they're not talking about it.
And I always had this idea, and as I say, when I work with some people in the coaching space, this type of things do come up. You know, life balance is a big thing, and it's something that kind of, I wouldn't call it specializing, but it's something very close to my heart to have a good life balance. But how much is the, and this is purely your opinion, I'm not pointing fingers at anything or anybody, but how much do you think is the societal pressure? You know, I know you kind of, you're self-aware to say, yeah, it was me, but you know, this is, again, I see a pattern. I see that, you know, young, getting married, getting the car, getting the house, getting the job, and the whole thing just stacks up to the pain in the chest at some point. There seemed to be a lot of that.
Yeah.
What's your view on that?
100%, Andrea. I mean, I think that's what society tells us, right? You know, get your job, get on the career ladder, get on the property ladder. You know, it's nearly mapped out for us already before we even start. You know, I joked about knowing that I had to go to college rather than university, rather than, you know, wanting to go to university. And I very much wanted at the time, but, you know, I wonder, would I really have had an option, right? And not just because my mother was a teacher, but because external factors, right? It was expected of me from society, as you said, that you would go to college, get a degree, get a master's, get a job, and do all those things. A lot of the time, you know, and some of the self-reflection I'm doing now is that our behavior is dictated by our perception of what we believe other people's perception is of us, right? And that is what's driving, in a lot of cases, this frenetic desire to a number, to earning, and you know, getting to a financially stable place. And a lot of time we're losing sight of the journey, right? You know, so we're uber focused on the goal, and it doesn't matter what that journey looks like. So, you know, I knew that I wanted to get to a certain number in terms of savings, investments, whatever it was, to have that financial freedom. And the cost to me of getting there didn't matter. You know, I didn't care. You know, if I felt tired, I felt sick, it doesn't matter. I need to get to that. And, you know, I think that if we stop for a second and we realize what's really important to us, you know, and focus a little bit more on the journey and getting there, I think we could probably save some of those pains in our chests and other health issues that people are experiencing nowadays. And, you know, there's probably a lot more people out there experiencing that than we even think, because as I said to you, they're not talking about it. But, you know, it's been interesting in the last couple of months. The more I talk about it, the more people open up to me and tell me about their experiences with that, with the same thing.
And we'll get to that in a second. But first, let's play the last song, which is Blessed We Are by Peya. That was a song I don't know. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, this was... So one of the things I did when I stopped working is I had been following Tony Riddle, who actually was on this podcast many years ago, and you interviewed and you met. And, you know, he calls himself Natural Lifestylist, and he's got a whole philosophy around it. And, you know, we may or may not get into some of that, but I'd been following for quite some time and very interested in some of the stuff that he had done. And, you know, not only around his natural philosophy, natural lifestyle philosophy, but also his endurance feats, right? You know, I'm a little bit of an endurance junkie myself. So I was very attracted to some of the stuff that he did. And I spent 5 days in his home. Actually, he ran a coaching course certification. And I was very lucky to do that in his house with a group of incredible people. But we went through a breath work and meditation session, and it was a pretty intense experience for me, given all the thinking I was doing. And I just stopped working. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. I had this guilt inside me about not giving enough time or being present with my family and my kids. And, you know, it was a very emotional feeling. So I kind of think back at that moment and think that is probably where some of my thinking has changed and where some of my reprioritization has started to happen. It's still very much in the early stages. But, you know, it was a very emotional experience for me. And therefore, I still listen to it on a regular basis. And, you know, some of those feelings come back, you know, and I've told the story to my wife, Olga, and we play it. My kids know about it, and we play it and listen to it together as a family as well.
Brilliant. No, but let's stay with Tony, and not necessarily Tony per se, but you know, you went so from this fast-paced life, including the fast-paced endurance runs and everything that you do at a certain pace, to now having spent the last few months taking a proper deep breath. Basically, that's what you've been doing, a 4-month deep breath to see exactly what's going on. And in the Tony Riddle retreat is part of what you're thinking is at the moment. So, and I know you don't have an answer just yet for what you're going to do next, but what have you discovered so far, and where are you going with with this thinking? Because there's a from the VP of global sales, whatever that means. Well, it sounds busy to, going down to Cornwall and chill out with the guys and do some breath work and do some yoga and whatever else and movement. As you say, even the way your fitness, you're now looking at de-stress in a different way, perhaps movement, perhaps, stretches, perhaps, you don't necessarily have to run 200 miles at a fast pace. So what have you learned so far, and what do you think you can add to those people that are talking to you?
Yeah, I think the big learning for me was that, I was using endurance sport or whatever it was to try and de-stress. But, in that state, you're in that hyper-regulated or fight or flight mode when you're training at that intensity as well, right? So I never allowed myself to down-regulate or to come down, right, and relax. One of the things that I've really benefited from over the last couple of months is using some of these modalities to just slow down sometimes, right? I'll quote you with your 1 hour holiday, right? That's something that I've started to implement in my daily practice, if that's what we want to call it. But just that ability to stop and think, right? And this is why a lot of my thinking at the moment is not, I've been lucky enough to be able to take 6 months off and do a lot of thinking and do a lot of traveling with my family and that kind of stuff. Not everybody can do that, right? So there has to be a way in which we can still go about providing for a family, having successful careers, but at the same time, being able to be in the frame of mind and the presence to have that 1 hour holiday, right? Or whatever it is that we want to pursue. And, there's a lot of my thinking is around this identity and what we identify by, right? And if we identify with our job or whatever it is, if it's one single thing, if anything happens, that one single thing, everything comes crashing down, right? But if our identity is rooted in multiple things, right? If we're not just the VP of sales, as you said, right? But we're multiple things, we're the father, we're the husband, we're the coach, we're whatever we are, we have different areas of our life that we can play with if one goes down. And then that also means that, we don't have to label ourselves as the VP of sales or whatever it is that we are, right? Because that doesn't define us as such. So I'm just trying to understand and think about some of the modalities and some of the things that maybe I learned from Tony and others, and how we can apply those to highly successful hyper-regulated individuals in order not to get to the stage where they have to take the 6 months off, as I did.
Yeah, no, it just sounds good. It sounds like very much needed. You keep mentioning a word, and I want to go back to it for a second. You keep mentioning being lucky, 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 and I'm wondering, is it luck? I mean, the fact that you throughout your working life, throughout things that you've done, you feel this lucky, but is it luck, or is it how you've approached your life?
The way I look at luck, Andres, I think, a lot of people would say someone was successful or got a break and therefore they were lucky, and that's why they got a break. I actually am a strong believer that, luck passes all of us. It's a little bit like a bus, right? You're sitting at the bus stop and luck passes by. It's your decision to get on that bus or not, right? So I would say that we have been very lucky in life. We have got a lot of opportunities, both myself and Olga. But, we did make decisions to take full advantage of that luck, right? I moved from a large organization to a much smaller organization when everybody told me, you are crazy. You're in the mothership. What are you doing going to this much smaller partner? We decided to uproot our family. Uproot is probably an exaggeration. We're only in Spain. We didn't go to the other side of the world. But, Nikolai was not even 2 years of age. Olga was pregnant when we moved to Spain, right? And, we had the opportunity to move to Spain, but we made the conscious decision to take advantage of that opportunity. And a lot of people told us, would you not wait until Olga delivers the baby? Is it smart to go over? You know, you don't know the health system, everything else, and your wife is pregnant. But we decided to do it. And I think that, you know, in hindsight, I think it was the right decision. And it's given our kids our kids and ourselves a fantastic lifestyle. So I do think we're lucky. But I do think also that we have put in our own effort to take advantage of that luck.
Yeah, no, and that's why I wanted to get that, because I mean, you're as we always say, you know, we're lucky to be able to run for people that can't run. That's our mantra, yeah. You know, when we go out running. But yeah, at the same time, you need to decide to get onto that race, to do that race, to do whatever. You know, it's up to you whether you want to get out of the house or not, or and make the most out of it. But to stay with that analogy for a second before we finish, now that you kind of starting to understand more about how to run the race, for want of a better word, you know. So you've done the Ironman, which I keep going back. Did you ever get the tattoo, by the way?
No, I didn't. I said if I do a second one, I will.
Okay, but now that you've done the Ironman, it reminded me, it was 13 hours and something?
It was just over 13 hours, exactly.
Right, so that's a fast Ironman for, I don't know, I couldn't do it, but if you, when you're going to do the next Ironman, if you decide to do the next Ironman, what have you learned through the working life? How are you going to apply that to the Ironman? How are you going to do the next one?
I think for me, and it goes not just for the Ironman, but you know, if I'm following an Ironman training plan, the way Kieran would have always operated is if the Ironman plan says that you have to run 20 miles that day, you run 20 miles. If I feel tired, if I'm sore, if I've got other stuff getting on, you know, I never allowed anything to get in the way. I would get up at 4 o'clock to go running at 5 o'clock if that's what it took to get it done, if that's what the plan said. What I've learned now is that it's okay sometimes not to stick exactly to that plan, right? You know, we talked at the very beginning of our conversation about I'm a planner, and a lot of my life and my job has always been to have a plan, make sure we're following the plan, and if that fails, to have a plan B. And I'm learning a little bit more to live, to train, to do everything, maybe with a little bit less of a plan or maybe without a plan at all, right? So if I have to skip a training session now, I kind of don't really care. Well, before that would have added to my stress because I would have been angry or disappointed in myself. You know, you're not performing at the best, or you're not following the plan as you should be. While I'm in a place now where I'm a lot more comfortable with not following that plan. And I'm a lot more comfortable with, if I commit to doing something today, to be able to say, look, I'm not going to get to this today. I'm going to have to do it tomorrow. And what I've learned by doing that is when I approach someone and say, hey, Andrea, I know I told you I'd get this piece of work done for you, or I would do this thing for you today. I'm not going to get to it because of A, B, and C. Is it okay if I do it on Friday? Most people are saying absolutely no problem. And in fact, I'm off on Friday, so why don't you come back to me on Monday? You know, so I realized that I was putting those deadlines and those pressures on myself, and there was zero benefit to the end goal or the customer or the whatever it is. And that's why I strongly believe that we can still be highly successful in our career and perform at the highest possible level without kind of going down the route of running ourselves into the ground as such, because a lot of the time there's self-imposed deadline and it's self-imposed pressure that we're dealing with.
Absolutely. No, that's a great piece of advice to bear in mind, that, you know, we, our own perception on what things should be really drives us to do things that are, that might not necessarily be necessary. And that's very important. Exactly. So just before we finish, you mentioned you're going off on a 2 week walk on the Camino with your dad. And that's, by the time this comes out next week, it'll be a week away from it. Have you planned everything, or are you just going to enjoy it?
I actually haven't planned anything, Andrea. I know that you're not going to believe me when I say that, but I've got the bag laid out in my room, but I haven't planned it. And you know, while I've slowed down, unfortunately, I haven't quite mastered the art to say no. So before we go on the Camino next week, I'm going cycling with friends for 4 days around Girona, and when I come back, I think I've got 2 or 3 days before my dad flies in and we go. So. The plan is not to have a plan. You know, we're going to take it day by day. We know roughly we want to do probably in around 20 kilometers a day. But the great thing about the Camino and the way it's organized is that you can kind of decide on the day, right? You're having a crap day. You want to stop and have food and maybe not keep going after food, you can do that, right? So there's lots of opportunity to do that. And, you know, we kind of said that this is an opportunity to move a little bit, you know, to be out in fresh air, and most important, to spend a lot of time together, right? So that is the only thing that we're planning to spend a lot of time together and to have a lot of fun. And how many kilometers we do, or where we start or where we finish, doesn't really matter.
Well, that's a different Kieran from the one I met a few years ago. Kilometers doesn't matter. This is going to be the capture of the how many kilometers doesn't matter. If you'd done that a few years ago with Claudio, you would have had to do 120 kilometers in 5 hours.
Yeah, I think poor Claudio would have been under a little bit more pressure if this was planned 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, that's fantastic. And yeah, look, it's really interesting. And really, I was keen to have this conversation because, as I said, it's out there. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of pressure put on people, or people putting pressure on themselves, as you kindly described it. And I think it's important to hear it from somebody that's going through. And I'm glad that you came around the other side, that the message that you got, the flutter that you got, wasn't too bad, but yes, was enough to make you stand up and think about what to do, or, you know, you as a family decide what to do. And it's great to see that you feel and look a lot more relaxed, and it may long continue. But obviously you have plans to go back to work at some point, and whatever you're going to do, you know, I'm sure you're going to do it with a different attitude, which is it's fantastic. And so what else do you want to leave us with? Anything in particular people should go on if they want to know a little bit more about you? Where do they find you if they want to hook up with you? Where do they find you?
So I guess I'm going through this journey at the moment where I'm trying to understand, you know, what is the next chapter. But, you know, as I do that, you know, I do share a little bit on Instagram, Kieran_3peaks, so people can find me there. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens by the end of this calendar year and what I decide to do. And, you know, thank you very much to you for this conversation. Every time I talk about it, it kind of helps me to make that decision. It kind of helps me to crystallize really what it is. And, you know, what I tell my friends a lot of the time is what we talked about, right, is be very conscious of not over-identifying in something. Be conscious that, you know, the pressure you're putting on you is not because of what other people or society are doing, but it's your perception of what their perception of you is. And, you know, that it's okay sometimes to stop and take a breath. And not only it's okay, it's crucial. We need it, and it's very important. So we didn't get to talk about your 1 hour holiday, Andrea, but, you know, that I talk to a lot of people around that to give yourself that 1 hour every day to do something that you really like, and just kind of down regulate, stop, breathe, write, think, do whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. One of these days I will release that book that I keep writing about the 1 hour holiday. But it's a simple thing. It's a simple thing, whatever that can be. And this podcast for me is part of that, you know, enjoying a conversation with somebody is part of what.
And I think that's what's so encouraging for me, Andrea. Sorry, I interrupted you there, but, you know, a lot of these things are simple things, right? And, you know, we read a lot of things around, you know, how to live a happier life or more fulfilling life. But the reality is that we all have to go to work at some stage, right? So it's around what are the small things that we can include in our everyday life. And the simpler they are, the more effective they are, right? We don't all have to take 6 months off or go off doing meditation retreats or anything like that. There's small things that we can bring into our daily life that can help us a lot as well. So I look forward to reading the book.
Absolutely. You'll have a signed copy as soon as it's out. But listen, thanks a million, and say hi to the rest of the family, and lovely chatting to you, and I'll let you know as soon as it goes out.
Grazie, Andrea. Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon. Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kieran Abitabile. If you did enjoy, please leave a review, share the episode, or visit socialfabric.ie for more episodes. If you are experiencing symptoms of burnout, please do seek medical advice. Contact your GP, talk to your nearest and dearest. Stay well, stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Sunny days now. We left some.